Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramar Tefio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. Good evening and welcome to Gather Round. I'm Ruth Marcy Field, and I just want to say that our guest for tonight, Paul David Rosenberg, will not be with us tonight. He's had some wonderful things going on in his life right now. He will be on later. He'll probably be on Feed Your Head. But now, once we welcome back, Monique Johnson, back from Tahiti. Hey, girl.
Hey, hey. So, yes, back from Tahiti.
Yeah, oh, that sounds so lovely. Being in Tahiti, yes.
Yes, yes. It was awesome. I love the atmosphere there and the energy of the people. And, of course, it's just beautiful, totally beautiful, and beautiful weather. And, yes, it's my husband's heart home. So my heart home, I think, is more Thailand. But his is definitely Moorea, Tahiti.
Okay. Does that mean that sometimes you guys are going to be settled there or at least get a second home there or something?
Well, no, I don't know. Wouldn't that be wonderful? I know that we will be going back often as we can, at least hopefully once a year. But as of now, who knows what, you know, what the future holds in regards to that. I know that we would be ecstatic if we could create that together.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Good to hear. Go right. I just wanted to thank you for what you brought back for me. And we'll talk about that another time. So thank you. It arrived very safely. And
awesome.
So what do you have for us tonight?
Awesome, awesome. Well, first of all, it's an honor to be able to bring you back. So, so today, as what's really has been going on is the energy feeling that a lot of my the people I'm connected to, and also even my business sister, she's over now. We're making products and. For our at our retreats and our summits and stuff, we offer handmade natural, all natural body bath products, and we've done this for a while now. And one of the things that we both have observed, and we know that there's a full moon on its way, but one of the things we've both observed is a bit of discombobulation. Having a little less faith in the journey and things being just a little bit hard, you know. And even my husband last night, it was like, you know, I'm clumsy. He was like, why in the world all of a sudden am I dropping everything? So one, understanding that if we are energy beings or spirit beings having a human experience, then we are all made up of energy. And that the difference that happens when the moon is full or when a prevailing energy around us maybe changes or switches, that we can actually feel that. And whether we're conscious of it or not, a lot of times we're picking up those things and we're actually acting from them. And they are informing our decisions on a day-to-day basis. But if we are unconscious of it, then they're still doing that. We're just not knowing why we are making certain decisions or feel certain ways. So what I would offer is to, in this next little bit, if you feel a little off lately in the last week, and you're continuing to feel it now, to one, be compassionate with yourself in your journey of life. And as I say this, I get a little quiet because I'm also talking to myself and my own inner being, to be compassionate with the journey of life, compassionate with yourself in the way that you perceive and experience life during this time, and to breathe. Remember just to breathe through it. And when I have this type of energy filling in life, it's kind of like I think it was a nurse that used to tell me, don't make any decisions when you're PMSing.
Exactly.
Don't make any life choices, changes when you're PMSing. So when I am in the midst of this type of feeling and I can tell something's off, I can't really determine what it is. I just know that life is not flowing in the same way that it usually does, then I try to increase my patience and increase my compassion for my life and my journey of life. And then I do try to do all the things in life that support me in having a healthy outlook and being a positive being for myself and for the ones around me. And in doing all of that, especially if right now ones may still be kind of cooped up because of all the weather that has been going on, then especially even now would be a good time to kind of practice some of those things of self-compassion, of being conscious, being aware. When you're doing something a little bit different or feeling a little bit different, asking yourself, is there a reason for why I would be feeling this? And if the answer is absolutely not, there's nothing has changed really in the physical world or emotional world, but you still have a different perspective that you're dealing with or a different aspect of life, then just understand that it may not be you. That a lot of times we could be picking up things from the prevailing energies around us, the atmosphere, the prevailing energies of people. I mean, a lot of times, even when the earth itself is kind of going through a change, we as energy beings can even pick up on that. And a lot of times we may translate that into the emotional language because we as beings have an emotional layer. So I just wanted to remind everybody of that. Some people feel that, and it's funny, I don't always feel that on a full moon. But this one, I've been a little lunatic. trying to stay centered, to keep my balance, and to be able to still make the decisions on a day-to-day basis that reflect my higher self or my greater journey than when I'm feeling a little discombobulated. So that is what I had to speak about today. I did a tea talk today, and I, you know, it was like, wow. I looked at it, and I was like, wow, I am in the midst of struggle, the energy of struggle. And even if I can't depict specifically what the struggle is about because it's not a conscious thing as much, I am in the midst of the energy of struggle. So, you know, and I accept that. I see it clearly, accept it. Even when I don't know what's going on, I still just try to remain in self-love and compassion. So do your yoga practices this week. Do your breathing exercises this week. If you do box flower and that for emotional support, this would be the time to do it if you're feeling all these, all the discombobulation that others are feeling.
Right. I always say go for rescue remedy and breathe.
Yes.
Can't hurt. I've been telling people lately to breathe a lot. So, I mean, I hadn't been conscious of that. So what you were saying, it's like, yeah, that there's a lot of lots of energy, and it is sort of, you're saying discombobulated. Yeah, it's convoluted. It's people don't know what's happening, but yes, they're aware that something's going on.
So. Yes, and that's exactly how, I mean, in the life that I live, I my intention is always to be really conscious and to understand when I'm in an empath place where I can pick up the energy around me of people, of things, and you know. And this one really kind of took me off guard. It kind of hit me when I was like, whoa, what's going on? And it took me a minute to catch up with, oh, my God, something huge for me in my energy world. Something huge is going on. And that's because I'm in the midst of planning. I'm so distracted with all the to-dos of the day-to-day in the physical world that I'm trying to make happen that I got a little, you know, disconnected with all the energy stuff that was going on. So, yes, you're right on the money, just even breathing. One of the things that my husband and I do sometimes when either I'm discombobulated or he's stressed, you know, is that we'll actually in the morning or even, you know, before we go to sleep at night, I will do my Ujjayi breath, and he will listen to it. And because he is not as much of a pranayama, you know, yogi person, whatever, but he will listen to it, and it calms his soul, and it calms my soul as well, and helps us to get back in balance. So for all of you ones who are out there who know the breath and who use the breath to kind of support yourself, understand that you can use your same breath to help support your loved ones. And I just adopted a new cat too. We've had her for about three weeks, and I will even do that, and she will come up and kind of lay on my heartbeat, and she will, you know, her whole energy.
Yeah. I was going to say that if you have a pet, my cats and I do this breathing thing all the time. Yeah. So you don't have to wait for another human to be around. The energy is the same. The breath is the same. We all have it, form we're in. So, yeah, I've like put myself to sleep sometimes, breathing in just the same pattern as different cats of mine.
Yeah.
Together. So it's funny. I saw a picture of your new kitty. So congratulations.
thank you. Thank you. She came at the right time because it's like she always reminds me to steel myself, you know, to get back to center, to when I'm in the midst of this busy, busy, busy season for me, to take time to breathe, to relax, to smell the roses, to look out the window for a while, you know. And so I'm so thankful. This is my first, you know, real pet for myself. I mean, I had a bird for my daughter, you know, but it's just a pet really for myself. This is the first one, and I am in the midst of major learning from her.
Yes. Oh, mine have me. I am the best pussy whipped person in the world because they have trained me. They got it their way, and we're all happy. It works. So, you know, it's, but they're very important. And what you said, because I don't have like children, you know, people sometimes think that they have to like, I'll get to that later. I mean, I push myself. I can do this and this and this. Now if I have children or somebody around, you say, well, maybe I better pull back and, you know, balance a little bit. And
yeah,
it's the same with you're sharing your life with the animals. It's the same thing because they remind you, like you say, just kick back, step back, breathe, you know, think about something else. So it's a good thing all the way.
Yes, I'm right there with you, Ruthie, and I'm so thankful because you know, when I get into planning mode, I am very aware that I no longer a lot of times keep my balance for that week or 2 weeks or whatever. I go deep into whatever I do. But I stay conscious about it so that I each day I'll rise up out of that spot.
Mention it. Mention it. Tell us what's going on later this month in Texas.
Yes. That's it. Yes, yes. So, I mean, I'm so thankful to be a pet owner now. I'm joining the ranks of pet owners, you know, and I feel like it's a great partnership to have. So, but yeah, so thank you so much for the time to, you know, it's something that I also really needed too, is to recount and to remind myself, be compassionate to the self, to the journey of life, still trust the process, you know. So I am very honored to have this time to talk about it. So thank you.
Well, thank you for coming on. And next week, let's see, we have one more time with you before your big event.
Yes. Yes. Before the retreat summit, yes. So anyone who's interested, we still have some spots available on the 24th. It's an R&R retreat, but we're also making it a Healthy Movement Summit. So it's kind of a double event. And it's in Waxahachie, Texas, on the website, healthymovementsinternational.com. So, yes.
It's all there.
We will talk one more time before that, and I have a online course that I'm also getting out, and hopefully next week I will be able to give a coupon code so ones who listen to this will be able to have it for the intro one for free. So
wonderful. Okay. All right.
Yes.
Well, we'll look
yes. Some diligently. Yes. Diligently working on that. So thank you so much.
And we'll see you next week then.
Okay, very good. See you next week. This has been Monique Johnson signing off, HealthyMovementsInternational.com. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Now we're going all the way to the Isle of Wight in the UK with Kit Perry. Hi, Kit.
Good evening, Bufan.
Hi.
Actually, I'm not on the Isle of Wight. I'm from the Isle of Wight originally, but I now live in South Wales, which is a little country just next to England.
Right. Okay. So South Wales. All right. Well, I saw somewhere that was Isle of Wight. I thought that's where you were coming from. Okay. Wales. Yeah, I had different people on from Wales. Different pagan people talking about different sites and different things. And the pictures I've seen of Wales are just, it's sort of like wild and beautiful. So, good for you.
It's very wild, especially the weather. It rains most of the time. Although we've got beautiful countryside and beaches, there's not a lot of opportunity to go out and enjoy them, really, because of the weather. Whereas where I'm from originally, on the Isle of Wight, it's that's a little island just off the south coast of England. Weather's a lot better there. But obviously the further you go towards the west of Britain, the worse the weather gets.
Well, so it would be, you'd enjoy it more from a boat than actually going out to swim in it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But tonight we're going to talk about a book that you have just had released called The Empathy Spectrum. And
right.
It is a fiction book. Amazon calls it a thriller mystery adventure story. And
that's right.
It's coming in I believe hardback or is it paperback? I know it's on the Kindle and the e-reader also. So you can, you know, take your pick. And you can also go to www.ypdbook.com.
Yeah, YPD, yeah.
Yeah, more about it. I wanted to ask, have you written any books before this?
No, I haven't. I'm one of these people that always wanted to write a novel, but I never really knew what to write about. I spent most of my life working as a therapist and actually in forensic psychology. So I knew quite a bit about empathy, you know, and how the brain works. And then I took a very early retirement. I found myself obviously with a lot of time on my hands and thought, well, why not put two things together? The fact that I'm obviously a great believer in animal rights and have been a vegan for the last, probably about the last 3 years, but 25 years plus a vegetarian before that.
Me too.
I guess it was having that time on my hands that made me think about something. I eventually got the idea together to write a sort of book that would have a message in it for people.
Well, have you written, or not written, but have you been always interested in sort of futuristic books or movies? Or was this sort of out of the blue particular?
No, this is pretty much out of the blue. I mean, I started writing it probably over 3 years ago now. Probably took me about 2.5 years to write it and 6 months to find a way of getting it published. But before that, no, I'd only ever actually written papers, academic papers and reports and such like. Read a lot, degree in philosophy and English literature. That's the first book I've actually written.
I think that's great that it happens to be this. Now, the two women, the main characters in it, one is a dedicated vegan activist, and the other is a hardcore vegetarian.
Yeah.
To start, so I'm sure then you drew on your background as both for different in the book, but it is futuristic. 20 years ahead, 2034 is.
Yeah, that's right. It's 20 years ahead because I like to sort of project it a little bit further into the future. But the reality is we're pretty much there already. I mean, the book is making a statement about an authoritarian society which we're living in. And for those that are taking any notice of what's going on in the world, we're pretty much already there. There's just a few things in the book that are perhaps a few years on, not quite here yet. But other than that, it tends to be more like a thriller than it would be reading a sci-fi novel. There's a sub-genre of science fiction called near future, and that's how it would be best described, really, a near future novel, which is also obviously dystopian. But it's dystopian not just in the sense of for people, but dystopian in the sense of animals, because of factory farming, which seems to be taking off, in America. I mean, you've had it for quite some time, but in other parts of the world, such as China, who are just moving into those sort of areas, and genetic engineering, and so too, I'm afraid, in Europe, which is starting to go in that direction, I'm afraid. So quite a bleak future for animals, unless something's done about it. And in a sense, that's what the book's all about. It's about trying to let people know what's going on, really, and saying that we need to do something. It's time to do more, perhaps, than just be talking about food and preaching to the already converted.
Right, into the quiet. Well, and people, you know, they don't seem to understand, even if they have no heart and have no passion for the animals that are tortured, murdered, they might want to think about the fact that environmentally it's killing the planet. You know, because people get into vegetarianism and veganism for all kinds of reasons. And I mean, I still know people who, they get into it for the environment. And then, you know, gradually, for some maybe pretty rapidly, then the compassion comes. When they, as they know more, then the compassion builds up. Other people
That's right.
For purely health reasons, and then here comes the compassion. Or they see about all the old growth forests and land and all this so that beef can be growing. And, you know, just different things. So different, everybody comes to it a little differently, but generally we all wind up understanding the whole interconnectedness of it. So I think what you're doing to put this out in a form, I think that's good, because a lot of people, I mean, there's been some fiction books that I've gotten a lot from. I mean, they've woke me up to certain things and made me explore, do some research. So I'm thinking that's what this book is going to do. The empathy.
Yes, I mean, you say it's a fiction book, but there's a lot of facts in there. There's a lot of psychology. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of philosophy. I think that the question has to be asked about how do we get to be vegetarians or vegans and such like. And the book suggests that there is an empathy spectrum ranging from, say, 0 to 6. And most people tend to be around about that middle bit somewhere. But depending on what happens to you in life, does it improve or does it become less empathy? There's all sorts of factors involved, really. But unless that empathy tends to improve in some way, we don't go in the direction of thinking about animals, putting ourselves in their position, wanting to do something to help them, and therefore becoming vegetarians or vegans. It seems to be a very slow process in developing this empathy that we have. For some, it seems to come at a very early age. I mean, there are children who are quite adamant that they won't eat meat and they won't touch any dairy produce from very early age sometimes, but generally speaking it seems to be quite rare, and in most of us it's a process that seems to sometimes can be almost many decades can go by before we eventually get to the stage of being a vegan.
Yeah.
So it's a very interesting area to be looking at, really, is what does it take to get you there?
I was a vegetarian for a long, long, long time. And I started out because of the animals, and I was running nutrition stores, and then I started, you know, getting it as far as health-wise, and then the environment. But I'm still in denial about, like, the dairy products and things. And the eggs, you know, well, cage-free, that means something. Well, what it means is pretty hard. And, you know, so it took a while, and then all of a sudden, it just clicked. I said, that's it. But so I was like you. It took me a while. I mean, I was vegetarian for a long, long time. And then, you know, the other came, the vegan. But I've heard of people who were total carnivores. They listened to Gary Yourofsky, I can't say his name right, you know, one of his speeches, and they just quit.
Yep.
They just went vegan. It was like, okay, that's it, I'm done. And so, like you say, I mean, it's just different people come to it, like anything, I guess, in such different ways. But
there has to be a few ingredients, doesn't it? Has to be the educational side of it. It has to be in front of you. It has to be shoved in your face, basically. But also, there has to be the ability. There has to be enough empathy there to grasp what's being learnt or being told you.
Yeah. Well, I was in a...
There's three different things.
You know, and I don't know which...
I mean, somebody's got very low empathy. It doesn't matter how much they're exposed to this, really. How much is shoved in front of their face is not going to change them until that empathy is raised in some way or another.
Right, because they're still operating from their own greed, or you're not going to tell me what I'm going to do, or, well, I want it, it tastes good, so no matter what, I'm going to do it. And I was in a pretty big discussion with somebody yesterday about the different forms of, you know, some people will just hit you over the head, and sometimes some people react to that. For some people, that just makes them mad and almost corners into doing what they were, you know, what we don't want them to do. For other people, it really wakes them up And they say, well, yeah, that's true. So I don't know. What have you found, Kit? What worked better in your experience? Hitting them over the head or just being very subtle? Or does it depend on your audience?
I think everybody's different. And it's rather like intelligence, really. You can put some before somebody, but if they haven't got the intelligence to grasp it, they won't be able to grasp it then. But if they can improve their intelligence a little bit in some way as the years go by, they'll be able to grasp it at a later date. And I find it's very much like that. I mean, being sort of bang on with people, so to speak, and showing them certain films that are around, shocking sort of movies about, you know, terrible things that happens to animals certainly seems to work with some people, but with others not.
Yeah.
It's quite difficult, but I think the more things there are around which they can take notice of, I think things start to sink in with most people, and they'll get there that much quicker. But there's not that much around, because, like I say, we tend to spend a lot of time preaching to the converted. I mean, I go on Facebook quite a lot, and I go onto many different Facebook pages, and there's all sorts of information on there. But who is on there looking at it? It's all vegetarians and vegans. There's very, very few people on there looking at this information.
Exactly.
Who we meet, they wouldn't go there. And it's the same with books, films, anything, really. So in some way or another, we need to get things to them, taking it to them in a sort of vegan or vegetarian outreach way, taking
right.
it to them bit by bit in all different shapes and forms.
Yeah. Well,
so that's what the novel is about. If we think about how many novels there are around with very strong vegan themes, I mean, I've been looking into this for quite a while now, and to tell you the truth, I couldn't really come up with one off the top of my head. There's quite a few around which briefly mentions these themes, very, very briefly, or may have a character in that is a veggie or is a vegan mentioned, again, very briefly. But I can't think of one that has strong vegan themes. And it's the same with films. We watch any movie. How often do you see a movie that's got suggestions of animal rights in or veganism? I mean, to be honest with you, the last film I can think of was a film called Starman, I think, with Jeff Bridges in, which always sticks in my mind because he criticizes his people, shocking, you know, he sees them eating meat and he's quite shocked at that. And if you remember this film, he brings a deer back to life because he sees the hunter killing it and he thinks that's totally wrong. And that stuck in my head all these years. I mean, God, it must be at least 10, 15 years since I last saw that film. But that's how sort of poignant these messages can be, these themes can be, but there's so few of them around. And if there were more of them around in books and in films, I think people would start to get the message that much sooner.
I think you're right. No, I didn't see the movie. My friends just say I'm movie challenged and they just drop it because anytime they reference the movie, I get that look on my face like, what? But I the ones I am familiar with, yes, there's nothing. As far as we're talking, I mean, it's the documentaries, like you were talking, you know, and some of those are more hardcore than others, but as far as movies, I don't think, and the same with the books, I can't remember, I do read a lot, and I can't remember, I've read books where, you know, like the characters is a vegetarian, and that's about all they say, you know, or they're going someplace, so so-and-so is going to eat salad, or, you know, that kind of thing, So I think what you're doing there again, it's another plus. And I also think that just on a day-to-day basis, one of the things we can do is with food because most people like to eat. And, you know, even when you were just saying, well, no thanks, I'm a vegetarian, but much less when you become a vegan, you know, the old joke about once they found out I'm a vegan, all of a sudden all these people are nutrition experts. You know, they just can't imagine that we eat good food. And so I
agree. I think food is much better as a vegan than it is as a vegetarian. I found when I was a vegetarian, I tended to be eating the same sort of stuff all the time, a lot of things with cheese in, etc. But as a vegetarian, you had to be more imaginative and really have to start looking around. In actual fact, you have to really start getting into cooking and that makes it more interesting. And there's great, much more diverse meals that we have now as vegans than what we did when we were vegetarians. I agree. I think food is very important because most people love eating. They're interested in food, etc. But I don't think it's quite enough to get to where we want to go, because I truly believe that we're under threat. I mean, there's a very small proportion of vegan animal rights people in the world, generally speaking. I'm not sure what it is in America, but say maybe 5%. When that starts to rise, we're going to become a threat. We're going to become a threat to the status quo, because veganism is a way of life. It's a way of seeing things, which goes far beyond food.
Yeah. Well, you know,
it's not just about animal rights.
Movie star or Bill Clinton started eating a vegan, you know, he's a vegan. He's no more a vegan than my cats, and my cats are carnivores. It's eating a vegan diet does not make you vegan, because like you said, it is a vegan diet. And I guess that's one of my bugaboos. I just don't call somebody a vegan. They're still buying and wearing their leather, and they're supporting this and that and on. They're no more vegan than they were before. So,
yeah, I think there can be a bit of confusion about the word sometimes. I mean, there are dietary vegans. I mean, some people that have to be, or for want of a better word, you know, I can't really think what else to call them, but there are people that have a vegan diet simply because they have to or they choose to. Nothing to do with ethics in any way whatsoever. So it's really the ethical veganism that we're talking about, and that's the direction that we have to be sort of going in.
Yeah. Well, one of the guys with, I don't know, Jeff used to do a show on my station. He's in the Philippines. He lived in Thailand for a while, you know, where there's all this wonderful fresh fruit and veggies and all. But he is, I won't say the word bodybuilder, but he has a fantastic body, and he does all this wonderful exercise and everything. Now, he got into it just because he'd been eating poorly, and he thought about veganism, started doing it. After that, he got very much into the compassion and the ethics, and he's like a philosopher now. I mean, it's amazing, but he started out just switching diet. I know that people can just switch and you know, progress. But I'm curious to have you ask again and tell us what has happened with the book, because, like you said, this is the first. It's the first. I think it is.
Yeah, I mean, thinking about it now, I can only ever think of one other book, which is called The Life of Animals, which is by a South African writer called J.M. Coutts, I think his name is, my Nobel Prize-winning writer, I believe. But that's the only one I can think of. That's throughout the whole book, you know, that is a very, very strong theme of animal rights in that. That's the only one I can think of, really. Can't think of anything else.
Okay.
But it's more than just an animal rights book. It's a human rights book as well. I mean, what I'm trying to point out is that it's not just animal rights, non-human animal rights that are under threat now. It's human rights as well. And if we lose our human rights, then what chance are we going to have fighting for animal rights? We've got away with so much so far.
Exactly. Because we are so interconnected. That old thing, well, they came for me, or you know, they came this, and I came for this one here, but I wasn't. Usually they come for me, they're not.
Protecting. It is interconnected.
Site again is www.ypdbook.com, and
yep.
Here is the empathy spectrum. You can go on Amazon, so different forms.
It's available in America on Amazon, but I'm afraid it's only available as Kindle in America. In the UK, you can get it on Amazon as the paperback and the ebook. But if somebody wants the paperback, then the best place to go is to www.ypdbooks.com.
Okay, then that will be better. Okay, sounds good.
Yeah.
So thank you, my friend, very much, and best of luck, because, wow, you're a trailblazer. That's cool.
Thank you.
So thank you.
It's nice talking to you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Bye-bye, then. The line's not too good, so it's difficult for me to hear you, but thanks very much, and goodbye.
Richard Perry, who has written The Empathy Factor. Dorit Jacobson, Shame on Israel. And tonight, there is so much to talk about. Hello, Dorit.
Hi, there is so much to talk about. Absolutely. I don't know where to start.
Well, I'll tell you. Tell us about some of these new proposed laws that the Zionists were talking about. Because I just thought I could laugh or cry. Because Ariel Sharon died this week. And
oh, yes, he died. And it was as if the whole country was had a military order to mourn, because those who did celebrated his death were not taken very kindly by the authorities, and I hear there's investigation on some of them.
Can you imagine? Yeah, because they were, well, some were rejoicing, I'm sure, but I mean, even the ones that weren't rejoicing, if they were mourning loudly, they were suspect. So
yes, and I don't think he did anything for them to be safe. I think they're getting it wrong.
Well,
but
yeah.
That's between me and them. Every day we talk about these things.
Yeah, well, I mean, everything I read was just, I mean, they called him the butcher for a just cause.
Horrific.
He was not a nice person. And he's been in a coma for the last, what, 6 or 7 years. I read somebody said that she hoped that he wasn't in that coma where his brain, where she hoped that he could understand some things that were going on, but just not able to talk. Because
I'm sure he could.
You know, that's it. She was just wishing that his last few years were pure hell, because he brought so much hell to so many people. So
yes,
I really hope that they don't arrest these people who failed to mourn, according to them.
I don't think so. I think they're just making them and trying to silence them, their party.
Okay. Yeah. Wow.
The Israeli left is not fond of him too much. They call us extreme left because we're for human rights over there. So insane. And here comes the real thing that will knock people off their seats. New law. You're not allowed to call someone Nazi. 6 months jailable offense.
Okay, so if you say that, like, Bibi or someone acts like a Nazi, you could be doing time.
I think so.
Or do you actually just have to call them a Nazi? It doesn't matter. I mean, it's ridiculous that because they act like it. We know And I guess that's why they're coming out against it, right? Because
yeah, they even killed a few people with tear gas. So that's gas.
Yeah.
There are differences, but this is much longer. This is 65 years or something. It's too long.
Yeah. Wait,
48. Wait. Not good in math.
Yeah. Yeah. So 48 is 60 this year. And you know, I recently saw a speech that Miko did in October of 2012 in Seattle, and it was absolutely wonderful. He just called out like it is and talked about just the injustices that are being done to the Palestinian people. He talked about the people who still have keys to the homes that they or possibly their parents were thrown out of, and the homes were given to Zionists. And, you know, he just told it like it is. I was very impressed. He has that book about his son because his father was a general in the IDF. And it's quite enlightening. I would suggest that people read that to get a real grasp of what it's all about. So, I don't know. The people you know, have you had any more friends or people interviewed or anything who've been arrested, or have they been doing some more demonstrations? What's going on, Reed?
I just spoke to a Palestinian guy today that did 6 years in Israeli jail.
Oh.
There's a lot of them. Yeah, I was chatting with him. It's very traumatic. It reminds me of the people who work in the rape center. You have to hear all these horrific stories that include rape and abuse. It's hard to hear. Sometimes I'm very shaken.
Right. And you know how you're shaken hearing it, and can you imagine the people that are experiencing it? If he was like so many, he was jailed for no reason and probably never really even charged. Did he talk about that?
We'll talk about it more. He was just thanking me for what I'm doing, and he said, "Wow, all my Israeli friends just talk about the economic situation, and you're actually talking about human rights. Thank you, sister." And that's all.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I can't help it. And then I told him, Abraham would be very sad to see his grandchildren fight like that. We can't fight.
Yeah. Could you imagine? I mean, because all the book religions, the three religions that come from Abraham, I mean, the Jewish, Islam, and Christianity, they just can't seem to, you know, it's not the people, it's the governments, though. So,
yes, they try to incite hatred among us, but it mm-hmm. We have to learn what they're doing and not go for it, not fall for their tricks.
That's not it.
Fall for any politics based on hate. It's just not practical, and it doesn't lead to a bright future for our children.
Right, for anybody, future or present, for anyone.
Yeah. I'm already thinking of beautiful children. All my friends are having babies and stuff. And I don't know about our generation, but I'm hoping that theirs will be better.
Yeah. Well, that was what in this video, Nico Pellet said that. I mean, he's working because he believes he can see the change in his lifetime. He said, "If I didn't believe that, I'd do it." So because he thinks that we really will see it. Since
I think so too.
Sides, you know, people from both sides want peace. They live together. They don't. I mean, they just want to live. Everybody's wanting the same thing, and they're getting
almost everybody. We got an extreme right wing in Israel that wants war.
Right. We have the fascists just like we do here.
Yeah.
And
yeah. When I talk to Palestinians, most of them are not like that. They're much easier to talk to.
Mhm.
And I'm Israeli. They're more accepting to me than the Israeli people lately. I mean, Israeli people, many of them want war. Then there's the Israeli left, which is very silenced, very put in jail, very afraid. And they have a reason to be afraid. We share our death threats on our wall, and they're just horrific.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that they should be afraid, because we know that most people that make those death threats are cowards to get down to it. You don't know which one is going to be real. So it's
exactly.
And then, I mean, if you're a Palestinian cause, it's not like you can just go down to your local op shop in Israel and say, hey, I'm getting these death threats, because they'd say, oh, well, so what? You know, why?
Oh, yeah, they'll say, good.
Yeah. I mean, maybe from them, it's like they're not exactly going to support you. So, no, I don't know. I did see that another child was injured this week, a 3-year-old Palestinian.
They attacked Gaza last night or yesterday.
Say that again, please.
Gaza has been under attack the other day.
Yes. Like eight, some kind of plane.
Small child was hurt in the face.
Yeah. And it's like, okay,
some Gaza says they can hardly sleep. They have PTSD, and drones are flying above their house all night.
All night. I think the figure is maybe 90% of people in Gaza have PTSD. Yeah.
I bet they all do. I bet the 10% that don't have are under 5.
Yeah, and because that's all
they've
ever... I get
scared just talking to them on Skype and hearing the bombs fall. It's very scary.
All the time. And they study what is going on, and sometimes they're using cameras because they don't have any electricity, and if they don't have one of those scary... half the time spewing poison generators, then they have to use candles or something.
Yeah.
And with the machine, with this noise.
No one
going,
can imagine in the West how hard their life is.
No, people don't understand.
Not even. There's so much difficulties that rise every day. If I was living under occupation, I'd probably be dead. Because people with health problems cannot survive these harsh conditions.
Well, and you can't survive if you're hooked to a machine, or you need to have some kind of a
medicine,
some kind of a medical procedure, because hospitals have generators because they don't have electricity except for, 8 hours a day. But if the generators go or something, I mean, a lot of equipment that they have that can't use anymore. I mean,
and imagine what happened last night. They burned a mosque in the West Bank. The settlers burned a mosque in a village called Kursa.
Last night?
To be exact. A village called Kursa, they burned a mosque.
And you said that was last night? Because
last night.
Because
I woke up this morning and the Israeli news was talking about it. The Israeli people are mad at the settlers, too.
Well, good.
A lot of us hate the settlers because of the violence. We don't like when people incite violence in our name. It's very upsetting, and we feel like we have to speak up, and speaking may not be enough.
Yeah.
Also, today there's a problem in Israel. We have 70,000-80,000 African refugees from Eritrea and Sudan. Did you hear about the baby that got stabbed last week?
No, I did not hear the baby was cut up. No.
6-month-old Eritrean baby was stabbed. It's in hospital right now. I don't know if it's a boy or a girl. I think her name's Coco. She was stabbed in Tel Aviv by a guy, and you know how they always say, oh, the guy wasn't stable. Like, who cares? He stabbed a baby. That's going too far. I lived with frantic people, and they're not violent, and I don't see why anyone should be violent.
No. And I'm of course, I'm going to say that because they want to say that, well, that's just a regular person, you know, doing this. But there was recently another demonstration by a lot of the African refugees I saw.
Today, yesterday, yeah, they've been protesting a lot every day. The ones that are in jail are on hunger strike.
Oh, God. That's, yeah. And they're again still, I think a lot of people just don't, they don't know what's going on. The media is very good.
Oh, yeah.
Keeping kind of thing quiet. They're excellent.
On the media.
Yeah.
The media is owned by the big corporations.
Sure.
Bibi sold Israel to corporations. So now Israel is another corporate state, doesn't belong to the people. The only thing that belongs to the people is the blood that they're spilling. The rest is corporate. And they're suffering from terrible economic oppression.
I mean, and people here don't understand. I mean, because Israel's supposed to be the only country in the Middle East and blah, 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 blah. And it's all supposed to be so nice. And you see pictures of people at the seaside and, you know, and it's just lovely. But then when you find regular Israelis going through the garbage for food, like in this country, it's, you
see Holocaust survivors.
Well, there's so much similarities, right, between Israel and the United States.
Absolutely, the same, feels almost the same, but I prefer the United States because it's not in fashion to be racist here.
Right, it's not taught as overtly as it is in Israel.
Absolutely
so,
not cool here. In Nashville, it's cool, it's not accepted.
That definitely...
And this is the South, and it's not accepted anymore. So it gives me hope. That's why I have hope for Israel. I know there's a lot of people in jail because of their race here, but that's something that we can overcome. There's a campaign for prisons, to end prisons for profit.
Mm-hmm.
People can join it.
Right. And I'm when we get off the show, I've got to see if it happened. I read, you know, I'm in Illinois, and I had just read that Menard, which is a, not hardcore, that type of prison. Anyway, I mean, it's very, tight, restricted, that kind of thing in Illinois, that evidently some of the prisoners in December had said that they were going to start a hunger strike on the 15th of January. So I'm very curious. I'm going to see if that actually started, because I hadn't heard anything news-wise other than this article about it. The CCA, the Correctional Corporations of America, is one of, you know, the big companies that has bought up a lot of prisons. And they're owned by stockholders who want a return. And so, you know, that's why they have done a lot of lobbying all for these three strikes, you're out, for different kinds of things to keep prisons populated. Because most of them in this country are in for nonviolent crimes. A lot of it's for marijuana. And other things that just don't matter. A lot of people are there for trumped up causes, like a friend of mine. And, you know, they really need to straighten up the system, and it does not need to be run by agencies.
Not for profit. Incentive to lock up people is not good here.
No. And the United States has more people percentage-wise in prison than any other country in the world. And that includes China. And
amazing.
You know, nothing to be proud of. It's just not a bit. It's very embarrassing. Just one of those other things that should not ever even happen. Shouldn't occur. Never.
It's crazy.
Yes, Now, I was trying to think. There was something that happened in Israel recently, and I'm trying to think what it was.
Bibi got caught today. They found out he's stealing money from the country and puts it in his private accounts overseas.
Oh. Well, sure.
What a sleazy man, huh?
Yeah, very sleazy. Very, very sleazy.
Not loyal to anything, not even the country he's supposed to run.
Oh, no, no. And I think that you'll find with a lot of these leaders that are on the iffy side, they don't have that. The people who have countries are the people that, like the United States, calls terrorists, like President Xi, like Castro. You know, these people are really loyal to their own countries. And,
yes.
And that's why the United States hates them. So
we love them.
You know? Yeah, exactly. We do. Well, and just like, he'll always be President Chavez to me, but, you know, he is dead now. And the United States just hated him because they couldn't buy him. They couldn't scare him. It was for his people. So that's one way to get the United States against you, to be loyal to your country. And the people, and that it's not just the country, but it's to the people, to want the best for the people in the country. So
yeah.
Israel, that's not where it's coming from. They don't have that. You know, you can't feel like supported by the president here. Just like Bibi, please. I mean, who would feel supported by him unless you're some super right wing? You know, we won't use the word not. Okay? I don't know, Sarit. I don't know.
Yeah, Bibi's a pretty scary guy.
Yeah.
I was wondering, he does remind me of very dark times in humanity where we had very scary leaders.
Mm-hmm. And somehow it's like, I don't know. It seems like there's a part of him that isn't touched by any of this. I don't know.
Yeah, he has his own bunker where he would be safe even in a nuclear war right by Jerusalem. Those people have it made.
Well,
they're
the
not
thing
scared.
Is, they, you know, the with a nuclear war, it's going to sooner or later wipe. I mean, they can't live for thousands and thousands of years underground. Okay, I mean, sooner or later. I don't know I know because they say that there's some, you know, other wealthy people around the world. We have some places like the Bush compound, someplace in South America, and, you know, different places. But I don't know. I think it's very sad. Instead of doing that, these people should work for and bring about peace.
Yes, and save refugees in the refugee camps that are starving with all that money. What a waste of money, waste of humanity.
Yeah, I think people may not realize, but there are some Palestinian refugee camps that are, well, the people are starving, particularly there, again, the older people and the babies. And, you know, I've seen some of those pictures, and it makes you think of the pictures we were shown of the German Holocaust when people were
absolutely
rescued. And, I mean, we're talking skin and bones here, or some of those commercials that they used to run on American TV about African nations.
This yeah, and before, they're dying.
Yes, yes, definitely.
And the UN say they cannot get in there.
Yeah. And
that's terrible. I hate war. War is so ugly. War is a racket. I hope everyone knows that. I sometimes meet people that don't know war is a racket yet, and it blows my mind.
I know, because people still think that it's them against us or whatever, like they hate us. You know, if one more person tells me that people in Palestine hate us, I'm probably going to slap them. I just have to breathe really quickly.
You know?
Say no. know.
You're reminding me of a conversation I had the other, two, 3 days ago with a Palestinian woman that hated Israelis and didn't even want to talk to me for a minute. Then we started talking, and I found out why she hates the Israelis. Because every time she goes through a checkpoint, the Israeli soldiers sexually harass her.
Yeah, yeah.
She can't think of us. Of course she's going to hate them. When she realized it made me sad and that I cared, we became like friends in a minute. We made peace.
Right, right. Because she was judging everybody by soldiers, and that's wrong, and that's something we have to do. We have to stop generalizing.
It made me cry. I told her about my experience growing up there, and we had such amazing solidarity. There is really no need to fight. We need to apologize to them, the Israelis. Us, we need to apologize. If we want peace, we need to do to them what we wish they would do to us.
That's the whole thing. You know, that the golden rule and whatever spiritual path you follow or religion, whatever, the golden rule holds true. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
And yeah, our religions are really beautiful. It's a shame they many of the followers don't get their religion.
Right, right. They think it's like, well, we're going to do unto them before, you know, before they can do unto us what we're doing to them, kind of thing. But no.
All my life I was born like an atheist and raised without any religion, but then all my friends are religious because we all have the same values. It doesn't matter.
But that's it. But I have so many atheist friends. I mean, I was raised in a Christian church. I'm not Christian now. But so many of my friends are atheists, and they're more spiritual than the people that I, you know, than the people that claim to be Christian. So spirituality is a whole other thing. It has nothing to do with religion. And
yeah, my friends are religious and spiritual, most of them.
Yeah, well, like, we both have a lot of Muslim friends. And
oh, yeah, Muslim, so, Jewish, Christian.
And Jewish, I mean, because I have Jewish friends here in this country, well, you know, like you, but and Jewish friends who are vegan. And but and maybe not Jewish by religion, but by culture or something, which the way I figure a lot of Christians are, they really don't follow, they really don't know what they're supposed to be following, but they check the box. Give them the, you know, they'll check the Christian box. They don't know what it means. But a lot of them are very spiritual.
Absolutely, because their prophet was spiritual. Their prophet spoke beautiful words.
Something, and you know, follow a person or a prophet. Well, then follow them. Do what they said. You know, don't do what these lame brain so-called Christians on the, you know, far right are, you know, proposing more war. I mean, Jesus,
I think we have a modern day Jesus, Chelsea Manning.
Who?
Bradley Manning, call him Chelsea. He wanted to be called Chelsea.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, I didn't catch
that. Edward Snowden.
Yeah, Chelsea, Edward Snowden. I'm still a fan of Assange.
The nuclear whistleblower from Israel, Vanunu, who is not allowed to leave Israel.
Yes, yes. I mean, that was, his story is just so sad, so sad.
So heartbreaking. He was whistleblowing about the plant not being safe for anyone. People who work there, cancer. It's very, it should be run better. I know it exists. They wanted me to work there when I was in the Army.
Right, right. But they didn't want the world to know that it exists. Was the whole thing that, and that's true, though. A lot of these whistleblowers, you know, they've just reported, like right now, I saw that in 2012, I think, a nun and a couple other people, maybe they were all nuns, broke in some nuclear place here in the States, and now they may send them off to jail for 30 years or something. And they were not young to start with. But it's, you know, it was easy to get into, which was what they're trying to show. I mean, it's not like they could stop nuclear war, but they were just saying that it's not guarded properly. So that
yes.
can get in and do these different things. And so, no, any of the whistleblowers really need our support because it's they're showing things that we need to know about.
And they're really suffering because of what they did.
Yes, yes.
Really paying the price we should for us. I feel yeah. like they're suffering for our sins as a whole, as a whole
society.
So that's
it, like they're taking it on themselves, right. I did recently read, though, Sarit, that Julian Assange may, like Sweden, somebody there wrote this wonderful article, and some of the people in the higher offices, I mean, they're very embarrassed by the whole thing because it never should have happened. So things may change for him in the near future. He gets to be out of the Ecuadorian embassy and, you know, do something else. Of course, then they'd have to, he'd still have to keep away from the United States because the United States is still after him. See, people are waking up. I'm very optimistic. I do know that there's a lot of junk we have to get through, but I think we're going to make it.
People are waking up.
Yeah. And just like the people that you're talking to, you know, you're making them see that all Israelis are not from the devil, and you know
we're all very different, and they can see we are fighting a lot.
Yeah,
the Israelis, we fight amongst each other a lot about this issue, Palestine.
Yeah, because some people have been woke up, they've been awakened, and others are still believing the state propaganda.
Yeah, we have very heated arguments on the Israeli forums online between the right and the left. It reminds me of insanity to see the fight sometimes.
Wow.
We try to not fight. We try to explain and talk to them, but sometimes fights do occur.
Well yeah. I mean, and that is just right, because sometimes the people that fight the hardest or the nastiest are the ones who they feel threatened.
Yeah, they're scared.
They believe a certain thing, like
yes.
all the time, and now you're going to show them, you're going to prove that they're wrong. And so it's that whole, now then they start to get stubborn. And it's like, well, you're wrong. They don't have the facts, but they're going to, you know, say that you're
yeah,
wrong.
We got to.
So, yeah. So
I'm working.
It's amazing. Oh, sorry. You heard one of my little fur balls. I was picking at them.
Oh, that was cute.
Oh, that's a Ranjay. Yeah, he's one of the big boys. He's the big boy that, you know, he likes me to hold him. He puts his arms around my neck, and he weighs like 17 or 18 pounds. And, I mean, I can hold him for a while like that, but then it gets a little heavy, but... Anyway.
So they're building more settlements as we speak, too.
I saw
illegal
that.
Ones.
I saw that. Yes, yes. And Kerry, or the United States, evidently, they made some kind of a mistake, as in okaying some of this. So, you know, before they were saying, well, that's not maybe really right, but... And now they're supporting something. I mean, it's just, it's horrid. I don't know. But I'm sure next week we're going to have more. There will be more horror stories, and hopefully some more public stories too. Like you and some of the people you're talking to who are changing their mind, because that's how it has to happen.
We got to all talk about politics and religion, I guess, what they say
that's
not
right.
to do.
they say don't talk about politics, religion, or sex. Plus food.
Yeah, they're all important to talk about.
Politics, okay? So,
especially with children. We got to teach children about consent from a young age.
Yes. Yes. Don't let the schools jade them up. I mean, the schools are not telling the truth. So you have to talk kids and just tell them that, well, you're in school, it's not really true, just most whatever, but we're going to tell you the truth. So
yes,
it can be done. Thanks to people like
children,
you,
are,
you're doing so
from
much.
From all the people I've ever spoken to, children and teenagers are the best. They really understand things because they haven't been too brainwashed yet.
Perfect. So you want to get them in, expose them to the truth.
Yes, it will do, from a young age. They want to know.
So, you know, but it's good when you find an adult that is there too. It's like, wow, okay, you got it. So, like that a lot. So thank you, my friend. We will be back on here next week. Happy full moon.
Okay.
And next week. And we'll see you then. So
see you then.
Good,
bye-bye.
Yeah. Good night.